Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
And we are back to Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, with your host, as always, Niall McGrath and Mark Moriarty. Mark, how are you keeping, man?
I'm very good, Niall. How are you?
Great, yeah, lovely weekend. The weather here in sunny Dublin, Ireland.
Do you mean lovely in the hungover sense of the word, or the burrito sense of the word?
A little bit of everything, Mark. It was a good rough sense. Weekend. The voice is feeling a bit strained, and the kidneys and everything else, but... You know, I need to just calm down a bit when the weather gets good. Sure, listen, it's
bit of MMA, you know, might do that.
That's it, exactly. And guys, on the show this week, we have Phil Claude from the Sports Lab in Oregon, Pat Healy's head coach at the moment in the sport. And we talk a little bit of everything. It's a really, really good interview. It's very in-depth, and I'd advise you to check it out because it's really interesting stuff later on. Also on the show today, we have top UFC lightweight, number 6th ranked UFC lightweight, TJ Grant. He goes up against Gray Maynard at UFC 160 on the 25th of May in Las Vegas, Nevada. So looking forward to that fight big time, Marco. Can't wait for it. It's going to be a cracker. And the winner of that, as far as we know, is getting a title shot against Benson Smooth Henderson. So
is he still the champion?
Yeah,
I keep on seeing him lose all these fights, but apparently the judges think otherwise.
And also on the show today, we talk a little bit about the new BT deal that was announced by the UFC today. We get into that, and we'll have a little chat about that later on. We've the press release here, etc. So we're going to talk, give our opinions about it, and a few of the opinions that we've got in our Twitter account today. So let's start off, Mark. Obviously, UFC 159, it was last weekend from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. Great night of fights, Mark, and our good buddy stole the show, taking home the double bonus, fight of the night and sub of the night. Unbelievable performance from Pat Bam Bam Healy. He said to us last week, I'm going to grind him down in the first and second and finish this in the third. Great performance again from Pat. Really impressive stuff, and I think we expected Jones and Sonnen to go the way it did. Well, I did anyway. First round finish, and pretty disappointing.
You had second round finish. Let's second be right.
Finish, but it was a strange night of fights, really, altogether.
Well, a stranger night of refereeing and eye poking and toe breaking, I think, would be the way of phrasing it, wouldn't it?
It was weird from the start, and then the whole Healy thing with Bruce Buffer as well. And the winner of this fight, Jim Miller,
one and only. It was just bizarre. Like it was strange all round. I thought Pat Healy just put in such a tremendous performance that it was sort of uplifting, and it really brought to life the fact that he's cutting a lot of weight and he puts it on back, and he bullies people in the cage, and the fact that he could bully someone who usually bullies other people in Jim Miller, he said himself that it was going to take till the third round to wear him down, till his superior size. Like even in the weigh-ins, he looked fucking huge. He was lord over him. He's clearly the bigger fighter, and in the third round he was grinding on him, and he took it the way he wanted to.
He did. He beat him at his own game. Definitely, it was a great performance from Pat. I was really impressed with Pat's. As Pat seems to do, he starts the fights very slowly. He was on the receiving end of a few nice jabs from Miller earlier on, in the early opening stage of the first round, a few nice leg kicks from Miller. But he always seems to overcome the early adversity. We've talked about this Pat obviously in the past, and really good performance. And I think Pat sort of knew before the end of the night that he had those two bonuses in the bag, the way the fights were going, and fully deserved. Couldn't happen to a nicer dude as well.
Because we were actually just saying the week before that this guy's been in training all year round. Been in camp pretty solidly
since
all the time.
July, August. We first talked to him, he's been in camp.
And smart dude as well. What's the first thing he does? He gets his taxes in. He sorts it out.
His first thing he buys, a new shotgun.
Good stuff, absolutely.
For Finn, his dog, he was shooting, apparently, he was saying on Twitter. Funny stuff. But
He's shot straight to number 9 in the rankings now as well. He's in that top 10.
Obviously, we've been talking to Phil as well, and we'll play that interview later on for you guys. But, really... really good bloke, Phil is as well, and from the Sports Lab in Oregon, and you know, he'll tell you later on what he wants next anyway for Pat to do, and it's I think it's pretty obvious. You know, Pat's mentioned to us in the past, if you're a listener of the show, of what he's going to do. Well, let's start off further back. Obviously, we had to start off with that because we were about buzzing after the fight.
A bit vested. I was booing other fights, hoping that they wouldn't do well so that you get that fight of the
night. I know we're a little bit biased towards Pat. We've said in the past, there's people who you get on with, you've had on your show, and obviously we get on very well with Pat. You know, you're not going to get on with everyone in the world you interview, but we're just happy to see and Wayne's been such a good guy to us here at the show. And it was a great performance, and well done to Pat for picking up the double bonus. Okay, let's go a bit further back. Facebook prelims, obviously, with Cody McKenzie and Leonard Bad Boy Garcia. Another terrible performance, I thought, from Leonard. Well, not another. That's pretty, you know,
thought the Max Holloway fight he won, but a lot of people disagreed with me on that, and that was fair enough. But, like, the guy, he's still employed.
Yeah, he hasn't been cut.
And, what he's doing?
We learned yesterday that,
Pablo
Antonio
Garza.
Carvalho and a good friend of the show, Pablo Garza, have been cut. I was a little bit surprised there. Pablo was. We'll talk about that, the cuts later on. There was one or two more we want to go through later on as well. But what is the situation? What do you think? He surely has to be cut now. You know, it's
he's got some hold over Joe Silva, and he just wants to continue booking him in fights. And like he booked him in a gimme. That was a gimme. That was five. Sorry.
Five, yeah. So it's you know, he lost Korean Zombie Nam Phan. That was questionable. The Nam Phan one as well. It was a great fight. Fight of the night. Matt Grice, Max Holloway, and now Cody McKenzie. It's five on the bounce. And has anyone ever survived five? I think four is the record. Matt Brown
was four. Yeah, he was four. Hardy. Hardy was four as well.
Dan Hardy and possibly Tito Ortiz. I think that's it.
Like, but this is a different time as well. This is when people are being cut for pretty much anything. They're looking to cut people. Like anyone even coming in from Strikeforce, if you're like all of the tough guys, they signed all 16 of them, and it's pretty much if you lose, you're out at the moment. And if you lose and you're on an undercard, you're pretty much out.
Yeah.
So you would have thought that Leonard, I think people just like him because he's a name and he'll still draw a crowd, whatever, and he riles people up somehow.
And what Coach Wink said to us last week, he was sure Leonard would be cut if he lost as well. So it'd be interesting. Obviously, you know, they mightn't have decided yet whether he's being cut, and we don't know. It might break later on. Sure, we'll see what happens with this.
You have your own camp saying you're going to be cut. It's always a tricky one. You know?
Exactly, man. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Moving on up the card. Obviously, Brian Caraway just mentioned there. Sorry, Kurt Hollibaugh and Steven Seiler. Steven Seiler defeated Kurt Hollibaugh. That was a decent fight, Mark.
Yeah, and
Kurt putting it up again. Good performance. He's a young kid, good fighter, and you know he's going to improve in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's the exception to the rule. I think they see what they have in him, and he put a lot of pressure on Seiler there, and I think he's got that thing where they see what they have in him and they're going to groom him, because that's the thing, you don't learn in territories anymore. You're chucked into the UFC almost straight away. You can't do the Pat Healy thing and kind of grow up in Strikeforce or fighting in different organisations. A lot of guys, if you're good, you're going to be chucked in the deep end.
Yeah, he's less experienced than Hollibaugh. Sorry, Hollibaugh's less experienced than Seiler.
Yeah.
But I think Seiler is actually a year younger. But yeah, no, Seiler's had a lot of fights though.
Yeah,
that's the difference, you know. But no, yeah, he's definitely, I think he's a decent fighter, and hopefully he'll stick around. Obviously, Brian Caraway defeated Johnny Bedford. That was a bit of an upset. We did fancy Brian on the show just about, and it was submission, guillotine choke in the third round, 4:44. Good win for Brian Caraway, and I think, you know, props for Brian for taking the fight in 5 days' notice as well.
Yeah. Oh, he looked dangerous, and like Caraway got caught, and like he got caught in an armbar there, and he managed to like get out. He was in trouble in that
big
fight,
trouble. And it was lovely transitions on the ground, and he rolled out of it beautifully on a couple of occasions.
And to win it in the third as well, like that's a real testament to his. He's obviously a guy, he knew he was on the edge there after the recent defeat, and he knew he had to stay ready. And him and Misha are slowly taking over, but by guillotine, it's. To win it in the third round, that's a real testament to the fighter.
No, fair play to Brian Caraway. And moving on, obviously, with Sarah McMahon and Sheila Gaff. And Sheila Gaff, as Joe Rogan said in the commentary, made a big gaff straight off, you know, running at her. What was that all about?
You run straight into a silver gold medalist. That's insane.
Yeah, I am. Incredible stuff. But, you know, Sarah McMahon didn't look too good till she got the takedown, obviously using her wrestling, and then, you know, dominated her. It was just like sort of mounted crucifix sort of position and flattened her out, and She got the punches in, but it was just a crazy, crazy thinking from Gaff and her stable and her game plan going into that fight to run straight at Sarah McMahon. I really just didn't understand that.
Well, it's
you know, game plan, tactic, whatever it was. It was stupid. It really was.
I don't think it's a tactic, Noel. I think she just wasn't thinking. Like, I think she's going to be kept with the organisation at this stage.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because the visa to get her over from Germany, you know, they're paying for the work visa, so it's a pretty big price the UFC are paying. But to be double-legged and pounded, like, Sarah has been groomed for that Olympian versus Olympian fight somewhere down the line, possibly another two fights down the line for Rousey.
Yeah, but I was listening the other night. You know, I've heard a lot of people say this about Sarah McMahon, that, you know, she's a very good wrestler, but, you know, transition wise, there's a lot to be desired. How good she actually is with the rest of her ground game. You know, defensive work, transitions in when she's on the deck, movements on her stand up. I just think, you know, I think McMahon's a long way away from Rousey. I know the UFC are probably thinking of, you know, let's see what happens with Zingano first of all, but, you know, a potential future number one contender. But I just think there's a lot of holes in McMahon's game at the moment. I wasn't too impressed. It was a good finish, but, you know, the fight was pretty boring bar that.
Well, Sheila Gaff isn't hugely high pedigree.
She's good fighter, but she's coming over from Cage Warriors, obviously.
She beat our own Ash the Bash Daly, actually.
That's right, yeah, Ash Daly and Jennifer Maia in her last two bouts. But yeah, no, listen, you know, it's early days in the women's division. All these girls, ladies, yeah, get another shot. And
I think that's kind of the cool thing, actually, because the way women's MMA is evolving in the UFC, it's still kind of, there's a lot of one-trick ponies out there. Yeah. And it's a bit like kind of UFC used to be at the start of the game, and when, you know, kind of a proper just solo jiu-jitsu would go up against a wrestler and testing martial arts against each other. We'll have the old school Olympic wrestler versus the judo player.
And that's it. It's a few years behind women's mixed martial arts. Obviously, you know, the girls at the top level that are awesome athletes, great fighters. You know, you've a lot of the ladies that are in, we've talked on the show before, that are, you know, proper, really good mixed martial arts. It's obviously their weight divisions aren't in the UFC yet.
Yeah.
And it looks that Dana's, you know, possibly thinking about you know, a couple more divisions in the coming months, and possibly by the end of the year, it's been mentioned. But we'll see what happens with that. But it was a good win from Sarah McMahon all the same. And fair play to her, and she will move on, I'm sure, to bigger and broader things. Okay, let's get to the first poking incident of the day.
I was waiting for it.
Owen St. Preux against Gianna Vellante. Ovens, he probably did win the fight. He seemed to gas out an awful lot. I was expecting a lot more from this guy after his knockout of TJ Cook at Strikeforce. Strikeforce, Rousey Kaufman it was, last year. But, you know, it was, he just looked like he got a massive adrenaline dump on his you know, his UFC debut, and he did look like he had the jitters. He did take, I agree with the technical decision. It was very unfortunate, the eye poke incident. The referee made a complete Sheila Gaff of that. But, you know, the ref, like, I just can't understand these bloody decisions that, you know, it's just complete lack of common sense. And it's like, you know, we watch the Premier League here every, you know, week, and, you know, you get some silly decisions from the referees. Just, there's no common sense to use at times. Clearly he went, oh, my eye, whatever.
He apparently, the words were, but I can't see ref.
Yeah. Like, come on. Obviously he's not going to be able to see when he gets an eye in a poke in the eye, you know, for the first, you know, 30-40 seconds. They should let them, like, sit down, give them 2 minutes or whatever, the usual thing, 5 minutes, the same as the groin shots.
Yes, what's it, does, but it apparently, in the jersey,
apparently the letter of the law is, if the fighter says I can't see, he has to stop the fight.
It's a verbal,
but, you know,
submission.
He said it so quickly that you have to give him time, like, Christ's sake, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there was someone saying that apparently the things you're never meant to say to referees are like sorry, or you just pretend you know what they're talking about and just smile and nod and don't say anything if you can't hear what they're saying. But it was an absolute gaffe, no, and a bit of a disaster. But two technical decisions in one card
in a row.
That's mental.
Yeah, it was three technical decisions, wasn't it? Oh no. Well, sorry, the KR. Sorry, I'm thinking of Khabalov.
Fingers.
Thumbs, toes, feet, thumbs, whatever. Toes, feet. I see a crazy card. Okay, yeah, but he did probably take the majority decision in the end. The third round wasn't really going anywhere. The both guys seemed a little bit gassed. But you know, just unfortunate set of circumstances, really. Obviously, we, again, you know, Rustem Khabalov, we were really looking forward to his fight against Yancy Medeiros, and I feel sorry for Yancy Medeiros. You know, this guy, you know, he's dropped down, you know, he made his debut at lightweight against Khabib. You know, he's dropped down from middleweight. You know, he's done both his knees out in the past. He's been out for like how many years? 2 years, nearly 3 years. I beg your pardon. Sorry. And you know, he gets a horrific thumb injury where he just completely dislocates his thumb. You know, you really just got to feel sorry for this dude. It's just, you know, some guys are just haunted with injuries, and Medeiros seems to be this kind of guy. We didn't really see too much. We can't comment, Mark.
It was 232.
The first, yeah. You know, there wasn't really much happening. Khabib was going for the takedowns. He up against the fence and he caught his, you know, hand in the fence of the cage.
Once that happened, you just had to go.
Yeah,
this
you had to. The referee. I was like, Jesus Christ, what's going to happen next? And then we got Pat Healy and Miller moving on. Yeah. Healy and Miller, we've talked about it already. Great win for Bam Bam Healy. Takes two of the bonuses of the night. $120,000 richer on bonuses. Fair play to Pat, and you know, he's going to move on up the ladder, and we'll talk about that later on. What is next for Pat after we speak to Phil Claude? Yeah,
have you ever heard more journalists backtrack on a fighter in history of going, oh no, they're both pretty similar fighters, but Jim Miller is clearly better in every department than Pat Healy's good at. And then all of a sudden, after it's like, yeah, this Pat Healy, he could do something in this. It's quite a funny backtrack.
It's always the way we backed Bam Bam for the win, and we got it right, so you would have won a few quid if you were listening here, and if you were listening on the flutterclub.com podcast, where I gave him as my tip of the week, 5-2 I think he was on some of the betting websites. Okay, moving on. Phil Davison, Vinny Magalhães. Very, very disappointed with Vinny. I did think Phil would win it. I thought Phil striking, as Joe Rogan pointed in commentary again, was much improved. The jab was good. He looked more talented, but Phil looks like one of these dudes, man. When you're watching him fight, he looks like he's a wrestler. Like just the build of him and the get up and his, you know, his posture and everything about him, we know he's a wrestler. He looks like he's mechanically
built for
wrestling and not for, you know, stand up MMA. But you know, it's still, you know, what is Phil Davis? You know,
but that's it.
That's the problem with Phil Davis. We just don't know where he's at. You know, he wins his fights, and then, you know, he's going to lose to the sort of upper two or three guys in the division. It's a very, you know, he just hasn't really impressed at all.
Yeah,
lived up to his potential. That's what I wanted to say.
It was a very boring fight, to say the least. It wasn't great, but like Vinny, he literally just jabbed him to death.
Vinny had won.
He won a round.
That was ridiculous. That was absolutely insane.
Vinny
even tweeted about half an hour after the fight, saying, "I didn't win. That judge is crazy. I didn't win one of the rounds." But there was only one time where Vinny actually looks like he had him in danger. That's when he had him on the ground and Phil got up straight away.
Yeah,
Vinny very disappointed. I would expect a lot more from him. He's
that kind of fight. Like, he's the best. Like, I've heard a lot of people saying that Vinny is the best gym guy in the world. He will go into a gym and like train with people and submit anyone. He's the best BJJ coach in the world. He's a world champion. But once he steps into the UFC, his head goes blank. His striking should be better. He's been doing this an awful long time. He's trained with a lot of top guys. He should be better at striking than he is. But he goes blank when he steps in the octagon. It doesn't come together for him.
That's exactly what happened. And I was very disappointed with that fight. And let's move on. Roy Nelson and Chet Congo, the recently released from his contract, Chet Congo. He hasn't been cut,
apparently.
He turned down a contract apparently before the card because it wasn't enough money, apparently, what he was looking for. Well, that was the word set out. Nothing was confirmed. But
he was the most experienced heavyweight.
Listen, I'll have to agree with a few of the opponents. A few of the guys are going, oh, why did they cut Chet? I really enjoyed his fights. Listen, I really couldn't care less that Congo's gone.
Well, it's surprising just that the heavyweight division is a bit sparse. Look, we were just talking about this earlier, that you're always two fights away from a title fight unless you're Roy Nelson and have a head of the UFC with a grudge against you.
Roy Nelson just took him to pieces.
How does he catch them all like that? Like, you know, he just catches them so crisply.
Just a beautiful overhand.
It's like a movie punch. Like, it's a proper movie knockout when he catches it.
You look at Congo and his last, you know, obviously the Barry fight, you know, he got knocked on his arse and it was an unbelievable comeback, you know, and he got the victory, the knockout in the end, but it was just, it's just like, you know, he won against Sean Jordan, a unanimous decision, unimpressive at 1-4-9, probably one of the most boring cards ever. But
yeah.
I enjoyed the main event. A lot of people didn't. I did. You know, Hunt knocked him out in Japan. He beat Matt Mitrione, beat Barry. Was lucky to beat Barry. I think it was a bit of a fluke. what do you say? Are we going to miss him?
Well, like, he does have that thing where he looks big, bad and scary. Like, he does look like he's a pretty mean dude, and he looks like he could kill anyone. But he's, what age is he? 38?
38. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's had his time, and, you know, it doesn't really,
sometimes
it doesn't make sense for the UFC to give him another 4 or 5 contract. I know he was offered it, apparently, so beforehand. But it just doesn't really, you know, the future of this division is, you know, it's going to be like guys like Travis Brown.
Yeah.
The up-and-coming guys, obviously, we still have Kane, who's relatively young. We've JDS, Mark Hunt. Obviously, well, Hunt, he's an old dude, but, you know...
He's young at heart.
And Nelson. But, you know, how much more does he really want to be in the division if he's saying things like that after the fight? He didn't sign the deal because it didn't suit his needs or whatever. They didn't come to an agreement. You know, it's probably better that he does move on, in my eyes, and that's my opinion.
There's a thing about the heavyweights. There's not many top guys coming through. Like, it would be great to see, but like, where does Roy now? Does he get that Cormier fight? Because Cormier, if he stays at heavyweight, the thought is that he's going to stay at heavyweight and start getting down in weight so as he can have that straight fight with John Jones for the light heavy. But he's going to be dropping down in weight all the time as he goes into a fight with Roy Nelson, and just to prove that he can do it, really. So, because he's obviously a bit worried about doing the weight cut.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, we have you have Mark taking on JDS, and I know a lot of people do want to see Roy Nelson face, you know, Mark Hunt, and I think it'd be a great one for the fans. But you know,
is it a sport or entertainment?
If Mark does beat JDS, and I can see it, I can just see. I don't know why I can see this happening. I just think Mark's going to overcome all the odds against him. I can just see him just getting a clip on JDS. I don't know why. It's just something I have in my brain.
So reaching up
about 10 yards, punching him in the face like he did against Struve. You never know. But if Mark does win this fight, he deserves a title shot.
Against Bigfoot Silva? Are we doing that? Are we doing that thing where we're all looking past Bigfoot now? I think we are, but rightly so.
A lot of people aren't. There's a lot of talk on Twitter where people are actually going to, you know, have a punt on Bigfoot, but I'm not.
Well, yeah, neither the same. But no, it was a good fight. But
moving
on to Bisping Belcher. Well, that was. I felt sorry. Like, Bisping looked. The glove kind of conundrum comes up again, like with the eye poke.
I thought Alan Belcher was terrible.
He was absolutely atrocious. Was he giving a round?
Someone scored the fight 29-28 when it went to technical decision.
Wow.
You know, it was stopped at 4:29 of the third. Obviously, it was a nasty cut, and we obviously don't want to see that. You know, we didn't mean to. It's the gloves again. Something has to be done about the gloves. Whether they can do anything is another matter. It's just unfortunate, really, is all we can say at the moment. Until they come up with a solution, I'm not even going to bother talking. I think there's been enough talk about it in the media this week. There's no way, really, of improving the gloves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe. One good suggestion was that the guy should be given the gloves for a while to break them in beforehand.
Yeah.
For maybe a couple of days or training sessions, and maybe check them again when they get back in the night of the fight or whatever, and then re-wrap the hands before they obviously put on the gloves and see what the crack is. But it
was a bit weird.
It was unfortunate.
Bisping had still, like, he still has that the nerve damage, and can't really punch with full force in his right side. And I don't think, I never saw a finish looming. I never saw that Bisping had the knockout power to actually finish him, but he just jabbed him to death, and he was so consistent. And
he looked comfortable.
It was comfortable the whole way, how in God's name that round was given to Belcher at any stage. Because even in the last round, he was being destroyed.
He was just gassed, and he looked tired, didn't want to be there.
But what was Belcher thinking it was going to happen? I don't really get it, because it was a stand-up fight. That should have been where he wanted it to be.
I question how much more is Belcher's only 29, you know, how much more does he have?
He's had 2 surgeries on that eye already.
It was a cut, it was okay. It was just a cut on the lobe, so it wasn't anything to do with the eyeball, which is great news.
Bisping's 34. Where does he go from here? Do you think he could ever get another title shot again? Get himself back up there?
Why not? You know, but the only problem with Mike, you know, where's his knockout power? It's always going to be a problem. And you can talk all you want about your knockout power. If you don't have it, you don't have it. And it's simple as that, really, you know. And Michael really didn't display the other night any sort of knockout power, so.
So we're not going to see a big main event on BT Sport. we'll go into that later.
The new UFC contract over this side of the pond, guys. Yeah. If you know what we're talking about there, buddy. We'll talk about that later on. Okay, and obviously the main event of the evening: John Jones and Chael Sonnen.
A fight of two halves.
Yeah, it was a war of attrition.
50-50.
You know, it was always on the cards, as much as I know you're a big Chael fan, Mark.
No, but like, I knew how this was going as well.
I think everyone knew it was going to go. It was, you know, nothing, no one didn't expect 1-16 on. And, you know, he comes away with his title and a new toe around his...
yeah.
around his whatever his toe ended up. It was bloody crazy looking.
Well, 27 seconds left in the round when he stopped him. And Chael appeared to say thank you to the ref. He wasn't really complaining about the stoppage until after it, and he had time to think. He seemed to be pretty acceptant that it was over. And Chael looked a smaller dude than John. John's a weight class above. Chael was just there because he talked his way into it.
I tell you, if Chael had pulled it to another round, though, it would have been a TKO victory for Chael.
This is the thing. Okay, I must propose this
and
option.
Okay, happens.
If now, the first of all question is, would the coaches have been able to, in the corner, block off the toe if Jackson could actually just hide it from the camera? but even then. If Chael Sonnen had won that fight and he had lifted the belt up in the air and said, I am the champion of the UFC, would that have been the worst thing that could happen? If he said he destroyed John Jones, he's killed the legend. If he had held that title up and then the biggest rematch in history had come up, would that have been the worst or the best thing that could have ever happened for the UFC? I say the worst.
Probably the worst thing ever, but obviously they wanted Chael to win that fight. So... you know, what can you say? Like, but the only thing is, right, at the end of that fight, the end of the first round, if it had got to the end of the first round, there's no way John Jones would have been able to stand up for the second round. Because, you know, you saw once the adrenaline kicked in, he walked over to Joe Rogan, and it kicked in, and Joe just went, man, your toe. And he didn't even realize till he actually got over. And you could see his face go white. And he was going, oh, what's wrong with my toe?
It's
man?
Only in UFC that the interview would go.
And he was going, oh, and you could see his face go white. And he was going, oh my God. And he realized then, because the adrenaline kicked in, if he's sitting down in the corner and looks in his foot and his toe's gone, the referee would have gone, boom, boom, fight over. But listen, it's all hearsay. It didn't happen. So, you know, there's ifs and buts in every sport. So I think we just forget about it and move on. It didn't happen. So.
Well, at least we know Chael, he brought up the proposition that he could be retiring, but we know he's going to be going on to that Brazilian. He's going to be stepping into Brazilian territory again, and Vanderlei Silva, this fight looms. I'm surprised about this because I thought he'd be going into a punditry role after this, but, you know.
No, I think he will. I think
he sees a big money fight.
This WWE thing is stir the pot with Vince McMahon and maybe try.
No,
get,
but like that fight will do well, Noel. You know that like that will sell big pay-per-views because everyone loves Vanderlei still, and like people love to hate Chael, and that sadly sells pay-per-views.
I said it on Twitter during the week. I'm not into it. I'm not into this fight.
I know, but
I think it's a lackluster, boring fight. It doesn't make sense for Vanderlei either. If he wants, you know, one more go at the title after beating Brian Stann, why not give it one more final whack? Chael doesn't really come into the rankings at middleweight either, because he's not going to get a shot again. He'll never have another title.
Oh no, he'll never get a shot again. But I think that Chael still, the people care about him or hate him, and Vanderlei people love him. So I think that will actually sell pay-per-views, or at least going to get people on for a Fox card. That would be amazing, because basically it will just have the mainstream public, who isn't you and me, because like you and me aren't the hardcore fans on the internet. They're not who they're aiming at.
Yeah.
You know, the people they're aiming at are kind of Joe Bloggs on the street, who kind of just might watch, oh, who's this Chael lad speaking on Fox? That for that purpose only, I think it could be a good sell. But yeah, maybe pay-per-view. No, definitely not another title shot for Chael.
Overall thoughts on the card, Marky?
Yeah, it was rubbish. It was pretty rubbish. Like Pat Healy won Fight of the Night. That was brilliant.
It was a
bizarro world card. Like, it was absolutely mental. And the main event went as we all predicted. So.
Yeah, it was cursed from the get-go with all the technical decisions, eye pokes, injuries, etc.
And we were served a treat with the Fox card the week before as well.
Yeah.
With Benson Henderson, Melendez, and the rest of the card was fantastic.
But definitely, yeah, there was a couple of fights. Obviously, Roy Nelson's fight was awesome, and Pat Healy's, and fair play to everyone on the card. I didn't think it was as bad as you did, but it was obviously just a little bit disappointing with all the technical decisions, etc. Okay, guys, if you want to get in contact with us, obviously you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls, at Mark Moriarty 101.
He's at Noel McGrath 4.
And you can catch us on Facebook, facebook.com facebook.com/talkingbrawlsmixedmartialartspodcast. And if you want to get in direct contact with us, you know the drill at this stage.
Yeah!
Talkingbrawls@gmail.com. Okay, guys, let's get to the first interview of the day. And we were lucky enough to catch up with Phil Claude, who is the man behind the recent success of Pat Bam Bam Healy and Dave Jansen from Bellator, who's getting his shot this summer in the lightweight division in Bellator against Michael Chandler on June 15, I think it is, Mark.
June 15.
And we had a great interview, obviously talked about Pat, etc., from last weekend. So we'll be back in a few minutes, guys. Check out the interview with Phil Claude, and we'll be back to talk about the new deal the UFC have signed with BT Sports in the UK and Republic of Ireland. So check out the Phil Claude interview, guys, and we'll talk to you in a few minutes. Cheers.
Hi, this is UFC lightweight TJ Grant, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Phil Claude, founder of the Sports Lab in Oregon. Obviously, his guys, Pat Healy, is coming off a great win last weekend at UFC 149. First of all, Phil, thanks a million for the time. How are you keeping, mate? How are things?
Hey, things are great, man. Appreciate you having me on your show.
Awesome to have you on. Thanks a million for your time. Obviously, Phil, it was a great weekend for everyone associated with the Sports Lab. What's the overall reaction and assessment to Pat's performance at the weekend?
Well, I mean, for us right now, it's just been a great, you know, great thing. Obviously, we're very excited. You know, it's been a lot to take in. You know, we worked really hard for that fight, and you know, when you work really hard, and you know, for Pat, you know, it's a dream come true. And so it's just kind of a little bit of a decompression and just being like, wow, you know, we did it. We put on a great fight, and you know, now it's kind of retrenching and talking about who's next. And so it's just been a good thing.
Phil, what was the feeling like in the camp leading up to this? Because Pat's a very humble guy, and he was seemed to be very, very at ease. And he, since he this was his first camp training with you full time, he was going in as the significant underdog, and a lot of people were talking his chances down. Behind the scenes, was Pat more confident as the fight day loomed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Pat coming over to train with us, you know, my background is more sports science and conditioning, and you know, I mean, the guy knows how to fight, and when we got him a lot healthier and his conditioning really came up, we knew it was our fight to win. And you know, he just started getting stronger and stronger, and his output, you know, his ability to train at a higher level, and again, just, you know, the strike volume, the kick volume, just his overall, you know, his overall arsenal, it just got better and better. And so a few weeks out, you know, we were hitting on all cylinders, and we knew that it was going to be a great fight for us, and it was just getting in there and really doing our job.
And Phil, just more to that point, because of your sports science background, Pat's always said that, like, if he wasn't fighting in the octagon, he'd be fighting on the streets. He's a born fighter. Did you have to really kind of bring anything new to his training regime to get him eating better? What's the main thing that the Sports Lab has really brought to his game since he started with you full time?
Well, I think it's actually just teaching him how to recover and just teaching him how to train in a more systematic process. You know, I mean, he's tough. His work ethic's great. But sometimes with those guys, like Pat, is just like you said, a natural born fighter. And it's really like just making sure that they're doing, you know, in a good systematic routine, so they don't become their own worst enemy. And you know, and again, you know, being tough is great, and you need to be tough, but you also need to be smart. And so I think the one thing I really added to Pat, you know, when he came to Sports Lab is how to really think through and systematically take care of his body and get healthier and really make sure that his taper to peak was set. And, you know, just, again, really making sure that he was firing on all cylinders. And I think that was the big change for him versus, you know, just being tough and not being able to predict how he's going to feel in the fight until he got out there. And so we changed his warm-up dramatically because he's notoriously a slow starter to try to help him through that. We changed kind of his taper so he was a little more rested and more recovered going into the fight. So again, I mean, I think the results really showed, and I think that was the big asset for Pat in that fight.
And Phil, Pat spoke to us last week. He said it was the best camp he ever had, and he didn't want to be cliched about this, and that's what he was saying to us. Did everything go to plan as well as it could have gone, and how happy were you with the overall preparation and the game plan going into the fight?
Well, I think for me, you know, it's always a concern whenever you have a new fighter in your camp, you know, how they're going to react and how you build that relationship, you know. And, you know, Pat has so much history and so much experience. For me, you know, it's just kind of like, getting Pat to really trust in certain things that were outside of what his normal preparation would have been, you know, and the guy's got 40, you know, fights. And, you know, so I think there was, you know, a few times where Pat was just kind of like, oh, Phil, you know, what are we doing? And, you know, it's really establishing that trust. Once I got Pat to really, like, you know, focus and trust me on that, you know, I think it was perfect. And, I mean, we nailed the weight cut, one of the smoothest weight cuts I've had with any athlete, to be honest. And then, again, his taper in there, like I said, I mean, he just, when his body started to get recovered from all the training, he just came on and, you know, it was just, you know, yeah, it was not a cliche of being the greatest camp ever, but for me, with a brand new athlete, you know, we just nailed it. It was beautiful.
Phil, can I ask you, just in Pat's last interview, I suppose what you just said there, you know, you probably had to convince him of a few things, and he talked about the swimming element and the plyometrics within the water and actually swimming, you know, twice a week. How did he take that when you first sort of approached him with it, and what was your thinking behind it for him as a fighter?
Well, I mean, for all those guys in here, I mean, this isn't specific to Pat. I mean, you know, I come from cycling. That's my background. I've actually raced in Ireland a few times and toured Nissan back in the day. But, I mean, for me, these guys are in a gym so much. I needed something to get them out of their normal routine, get them in a different environment where I can work them very hard, but kind of, you know, break the monotony of being inside of a gym every day. So the swimming was kind of the initial, you know, focus or the initial goal of the swimming was just to get these guys out of their gym. And then, you know, for me, I need to make sure that they're doing, you know, doing the work that I need them to develop cardiovascularly, develop explosive power and stuff like that. And so it's just, you know, systematic, you know, process of elimination of designing workouts that weren't just swimming based, but also were starting to work on the conditioning stuff and just being creative and taking stuff from other people over the years and keeping it fun and keeping the guys engaged. And, I mean, I think, you know, whenever you take people who can't swim and make them swim, it usually never goes off very well. You know, giving these guys a chance to swim a little bit, but also run around in the water and jump in the water and play water polo and things that are very difficult, very taxing, but on the flip side, not necessarily forcing them to lap swim, you know, countless, you know, thousands of meters. So I mean, to make a long story short, I just needed something that was fun, something that was difficult, and something I could get a lot of work out of these guys outside of the gym environment, so they could keep moving forward in their conditioning.
Excellent.
And Phil, could you just explain a little bit to our listeners here, how did the sports lab come about? Because I know you deal with your cyclists, you've pre-season and post-season plans for different type of athletes. How did you sort of piece everything together, and how did, you know, the whole big team that it is now come about?
Well, I think you got to go back a couple of decades for me. I used to coach at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, and part of my responsibility there was to really monitor and maintain the wellness of the athletes and kind of predict how they were going to perform on an international or Olympic levels. And it became really clear to me in the mid-90s that most of the athletes that we had were actually relatively hurt from their training processes. So I became very, very focused on how do you keep an athlete healthy long enough to figure out how good they're going to be. And after I left the Olympic Training Center in Colorado, I moved back to Portland, Oregon, where I, you know, kind of just started my own training facility really based off of, you know, keeping young athletes healthy and, you know, doing all the conditioning work, but also the physiotherapy and other things so that, you know, again, you could do the accumulative training to figure out how good you were going to be. And then for me on a personal level, I started working with a lot of different sports because, you know, I'm just like anybody. I get bored quickly. And so I started working with, like, NFL football players and basketball players and all sorts of, you know, track and field athletes because it was exciting for me. And that's actually kind of how I got into MMA is I know the doctor who was helping Nate Corey, a UFC fighter, come back from his back surgery. And the first MMA athlete or UFC athlete I worked with was basically doing the rehab for Nate Corey's back surgery and getting him back into the UFC. And And at first, to be honest, I didn't really enjoy MMA all that much. And then, you know, I started working with Mike Pierce shortly thereafter and kind of fell in love with the sport, and the rest is kind of history. So.
Did you ever find, from a coaching perspective, MMA, the sports science is really starting to come into it now in the last few years, but for a long time, top collegiate athletes from coming out of college, they might have trained martial arts as they were coming through, but if you were a top athlete, you'd go into football, ice hockey or basketball, where there'd be more money. Do you find there's a better class of athlete coming through now that would actually think of mixed martial arts as a career that they could actually prosper in?
100%, yeah. I mean, and this is one of my things, and you know, the people that are around me all the time, I mean, I've said this for years, I mean, the genetic pool in America is in sports like, you know, NFL football. And when some of these guys, and we'll pick John Jones to be, you know, for a good example, when the level of the athlete comes in line and the higher level athletes start to come to the sport because you can make a living at it, and then, you know, coupled with the sports science aspects, you're going to see guys getting faster, stronger, their careers are going to last much longer. I mean, I think it's going to elevate, I think in the next 5 to 10 years, the level of fighting is even going to continue to go on to a much higher level. And, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a beautiful thing for the sport. And I think the days of the tough kid, no skill, and who's not coachable, is, I mean, I think we're at the end of that. And with each passing month, it's going to be harder and harder to be successful at the high level of the sport without the good, you know, good athletic abilities and great coaching. So.
Phil, I myself am a physiotherapist, and I'm down in the SBG gym where Conor McGregor fights out of, and I've just recently started there as I go in and do a clinic sort of once a week. How much do sort of the physio medical team have an input in your lab with regards to recovery with the strength and conditioning guys, and are they based within, you know, are they in-house, or do you bring people in?
No. I mean, right now we're in the process of actually building a brand new facility that has a whole physiotherapy department. But for me, it works hand in hand. And, you know, and again, in America, you know, it's amazing to me what low standards the training gyms have for what's in there. Again, if you go to a university in America and you went into, you know, into the football locker room and they said, "Hey, we got a shower. This is really exciting." most athletes would be like, "What do you mean you don't have a shower?" So, I mean, I think that's also the transition of the sport right now in MMA. You're going to start to see the transition from gyms to actual training centers. And the training centers are going to have physical therapists there, physiotherapists. They're going to have other medical, you know, training rooms and athletic trainers. And I think that that's the future, you know, just like anything, because again, if you're a high level professional athlete, you need to spend as much time taking care of your body as you do training. And if you're not, you're not going to last very long. You're just going to wear yourself out.
And within that team, is there scope then for the sort of psychology of sport? Do you have a sort of in-house person, you know, psychologist?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with a number of sports psychologists in the past. Because of the number of MMA athletes and again, the background, that a lot of these guys have, I use more of an audio cassette with kind of like, you know, post-workout imagery, you know, and some relaxation stuff and breathing techniques. I found that, you know, just the, you know, a good old iPod, you know, playing a couple of things works very effective for that. And I've worked on higher levels with people that have a little more competitive anxieties, you know, working specifically one-on-one with a sports psychologist and an athlete. But I mean, I try to give these guys for that aspect. I try to give these guys tools, but not necessarily assume that they have problems and try to fix problems before they really arise. So I mean, I don't talk about, you know, performance anxiety for somebody who doesn't have that. You know, so I kind of, you know, design a custom program based off what that athlete really needs.
Excellent.
And obviously, we know you've Pat, you've Ryan Healy, you've Ian Loveland, you've Mike Pierce. But Dave Johnson, obviously, his title fight against Michael Chandler was announced this week. How excited are you guys in the lab about that? And how much are you looking forward to that fight?
Well, we're looking forward to a lot. I mean, it's been already been a crazy year for us. With Pat Healy winning his fight, you know, Dave Johnson already winning the tournament, now going into a title fight. Yeah, we're very excited. I mean, and for me, what I'm learning is, you know, these guys get to take a break after their fights for a little bit, but I don't have the luxury of doing that. I think the biggest problem right now is just learning how to gauge my own energy so that I don't get burned out on this because, you know, I mean, again, I got Dave and I got off the airplane the next morning. I was, you know, doing, you know, specific conditioning work with Dave Jansen. We're very, very excited about it. But on the flip side, I mean, you know, for me right now, I'm like, wow, you know.
you need a recovery team for yourself, Phil.
Sorry, go ahead there.
Sorry. I just used the sports with seasons where I get like a, you know, I can coach for 6 months, you know, straight and then get a month or two off. But with the fighting, it's just constant. And with these fights getting bigger and bigger, it's getting crazier and crazier for me.
And it must be, it's obviously going to be a huge buzz, but a guy like Michael Chandler, one of the best guys in the world. Where do you think, Dave can win this fight?
Well, I think we can win this fight on the ground, to be honest. You know, I mean, Dave's one of the scrappiest, toughest guys out there, and, you know, what he lacks in other things, you know, he makes up, and just, you know, the guys are, you know, he's like Pat Healy. I mean, he's a through-and-through fighter, you know, he loves to fight, he loves to get in there, he loves to get it dirty, and I mean, you've seen in those last several fights, the guy's not afraid to bring it on any day, you know, and then, you know, so for me, it's keeping Dave healthy, you know, getting his, you know, striking skills up, and so we can neutralize, you know, Chandler there, and then, you know, getting another guy on the ground, and we're just gonna beat the guy up. It's gonna be a nasty fight. You know, Dave's one of the best in the world at that.
Phil, seeing as you spend so much time coaching at the U.S. Olympic Training Center, first of all, what did you take from it, and how do you feel about the concept of wrestling being cut from the Olympics, and how do you think that will affect people going into mixed martial arts?
Well, I mean, in my mind, you just asked me kind of two questions. What did I take from, you know, working at the Olympic Training Center? What I took from there is how to be very good at what you do. When you're coaching at the Olympic Training Center, everybody wants your job. You know, you're under a microscope. You know, basically everybody, you know, will tell anybody what an idiot you are, what a horrible coach. You have to coach at a very high level because you're constantly under, you know, criticism. And you're constantly under the gun there. And if you don't want to do your job at the Olympic Training Center, they'll fire you and they'll find somebody to replace you. So it makes you very good at what you do because you have no margin of error and everybody wants to line up and tell you what an idiot you are. And so what I took from that is how to have tough skin, how to take criticism, how to really focus on constantly becoming a better coach and learning and at the end of the day, just being very good at what you do because you don't have that margin. Now, the question of wrestling, I don't really get what's going on. To my understanding, you know, wrestling is one of the charter sports, and it's very difficult to remove one of the charter sports, one of the original sports in the Olympics. So I don't have any inside knowledge over why they want to remove it, but I know it's a very difficult thing to remove it. And, you know, I mean, it's just got to be politics. I mean, it's got to be... There's got to be a bigger reason than just them not wanting wrestling anymore. It's got to be a much bigger issue than that. And I mean, I wish that I had had some knowledge and knew the right person to call. But I mean, I think it'll all come out in time. But there's got to be a much bigger reason why they want to remove wrestling from the Olympics.
Yeah, Phil, I think it's basically the countries who are on the main Olympic committee at the moment. The countries basically who are at the top of the committee haven't got any vested interest in wrestling, and they're the people with the vote at the moment, and they're not going for it.
Phil,
yeah, and like I said, in my understanding, the original charter sports were protected, and you needed a unanimous vote to remove one of the original charter sports from the 1916, you know, Olympics in France. But I mean, maybe they revised the bylaws of, you know, how the IOCs, you know, governed. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, like I said, there must have been some pretty intense meetings to even have that proposed, let alone get it to the point where they actually have a date that they're going to remove it. And so, I mean, I hope that they come to their senses because, I mean, I love wrestling. I think it's a beautiful sport, and I think it's really unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate for MMA. I think it's unfortunate for kids all over the world, and I think it's unfortunate for the kids who have the opportunity to go to college and get a free education on a wrestling scholarship. So I think it's the whole thing's a bad thing, and I think it's a big mistake.
Yeah. Phil, taking it to the sport that you sort of had your success in with the cycling, you know, recently, obviously, Lance Armstrong and really the drug issue within the sport. What sort of is your feeling now about the performance-enhancing drugs, you know, within mixed martial arts and then within your gym? You know, would you sort of be cautious if a fighter decided that that's the route they were going to go down?
Wow.
That's a big loaded question there, Phil.
For me, on a personal level, yeah, I come from a dirty sport. And if you race bikes professionally, you've been exposed to it at some level. So I think as a coach, it gives me a little bit of an advantage because I'm not really, you know, I don't really have my head in the sand. So when I see certain athletes who have certain personality types or certain changes physically or, you know, psychologically, it's pretty easy for me to pick up, you know, on what's going on. I mean, I'm not perfect by any stretch, but, you know, it's pretty tough to get that one by me. I mean, for me personally, I have a zero tolerance policy for that. I mean, one of my things as a coach, I have a deep, you know, seated core philosophy that my job as a coach is to make sure these guys can be professional and world-class athletes now, but not at the expense of being able to walk or talk or, you know, be okay when they're 50 or 60. And so if any of my athletes did fly under the radar and I didn't pick it up and they tested positive, they'd be gone in a second. I wouldn't even think twice about it. And my relationship and friendship with them forever. I mean, I just wouldn't tolerate it at any level.
Excellent. Brilliant.
In MMA as a whole, I think we got big problems.
Yeah.
I think that there's drugs that are being used out there, Provigil, Adderall, other drugs like that are kind of flying under the radar. I think that drug testing has to get a lot stricter. I think it needs a centralized drug testing, whether it be WADA or whoever, and not be state-driven by the fight commissions. I think that there needs to be a substantial out-of-competition testing program. By the time somebody gets ready for a fight and taper down, I mean, there's a lot of smart people out there that don't use their knowledge for good. And testing at the event or post-event is almost ridiculous in my mind. They need out-of-competition testing. I think all the TRT stuff needs to be stopped immediately.
Yeah.
If you're on TRT, then you can't compete.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, and especially when you're on TRT because you've systematically ruined your own ability to produce testosterone because of using other substances in the past.
Juicing.
I think it needs to get much more rigid. I don't think that there should be any gray area. I don't think you should be able to go to a commission and petition individually. I mean, if you're on TRT, you can't compete. And all the other drugs, I think there should be a zero policy. You test positive for a stimulant or Adderall or something like that, you're just gone forever. I think, you know, there just needs to be a zero tolerance.
Completely agree.
Yeah,
absolutely. Phil, you talk about your expanding the sports lab now. What does the future hold for you? And are you looking to expand and getting more top MMA fighters, more marquee names into it?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, I'm actually standing in the middle of our new gym. We're finishing painting up right now. So we're moving into a new 10,000 square foot facility. Pretty excited. I mean, for me, it's all full steam ahead. I mean, I want more fighters. I want better fighters. I want to start bringing in more of a developmental process. I'm on a youth wrestling program, a youth boxing program. Because for me, that systematic pipeline is also something that's very near and dear to me.
Yeah.
So instead of just taking guys that are already there and making them a little bit better, I want to actually start to create homegrown athletes and really start to bring them up through that whole process. Because if I would have gotten Pat Healy when he was 14 or 15 years old, what could have I done with him? If I taught him all the stuff that I'm teaching him right now when he was 15, so by the time, you know, he's 28 or 29, he's not learning how to taper. He's not learning about all the stuff. You know, what is the real upside? So for me, over the next, 10 years or so, is to keep building all my programs, but more importantly, really start to come up with that pipeline to take young athletes and really teach them how to be, you know, world-class athletes from a very early age. So by the time they get to that level, you're not having to back teach them things they should have already known.
That's very exciting.
And Phil, we had Pat obviously on the show last week, and just a bit of ammunition for yourself if you're ever having a little argument. He called you super intelligent on the show.
I don't know if I'd go that far. But yeah.
just take your 10% of the 130 grand.
I'm smart enough not to have to remind myself how to breathe. So I think, you know, I do better than most. But yeah, I definitely have my days where, like, even I ask myself, like, where did I get that?
Phil, brilliant stuff. And Phil, just a couple of more questions before we wrap it up. Pat was very complimentary of the rest of your team around you, Antoinette and Scott. Could you just have a word for them and how important are they to the Sports Lab team?
Well, I mean, for me, like, back to, I mean, these are my family, you know. I spend as much time with all these fighters as I do with anybody. And so for me, the character and the quality of the people that are around me have everything to do with how my day is going. And so I don't really, you know, nothing's perfect, but, you know, I have to like these guys, and, you know, we spend so much time with each other, and even with, like, you know, Pat, you know, I just spent a week in the hotel room with four guys, you know? So if you, and I'm 43 years old, you know, and I'm, you know, sleeping on the floor, so you have to love who you're around, because, you know, if not, it's a miserable experience. And so for me, my greatest compliment to the Sports Lab guys right now is we got nice guys, you know, and these are great people, and these are people that you can stay in a hotel room, you know, on the other side of the country for, you know, a week and not get on each other's nerves. And so Pat, Mike Pierce, Dave Jansen, you know, I mean, the list is Tyson Nam, Ian Loveland. I mean, these are all guys that it makes it very easy to do that with. And, you know, I got nothing but good things to say about the personality and the overall culture of the Sports Lab fight team.
Phil, we talked with Mike Winklejohn last week. How do you find it now to be in a sport and training MMA fighters where there's no season and there's no off season? Do you find that that's going to be hard as more MMA fighters come down, that you're going to be constantly on all the time?
Well, I think the easy answer to that is everybody's going to find their own tolerance. You know, you got Winklejohn and Greg Jackson, to my knowledge, have kind of teamed up where one guy's on the road all the time and one guy's back home doing the training. So I think what you're going to do is you're going to see the coaches kind of form in kind of a complementary way, where you have people that are the corners, and you're going to have the people that are back in the gym doing all the, you know, all the day in, day out training. And I think for me that's really even where my coaching program's going to go. I mean, I pride myself on being kind of a trench coach. I'm the guy who gets up every morning at 5 a.m. and is in the gym first, and I'm the last guy to leave. But my background is not fighting either. So, you know, I'm the last guy on earth that you ever want to tell you what to do in the corner, you know? I mean, I'll just tell you, punch the guy in the face, you know? You know, so I think that's what you're going to see are coaches that go with the fighters, who can corner guys, who can tell them, and then you're going to have guys like me who really get the guy really ready to go from that physical standpoint. But again, when the cage door closes, or by the time I get to the fight, I mean, you know, I've already done my job. And then I kind of live by a philosophy that a great coach told me once, and he said, if you're coaching as the Olympic Games, you already screwed up, because your athletes should be so prepared, you know, by the time they get there, that coaching's minimal. And so I think, again, how am I going to keep myself from getting burned out as the sport grows? I'm probably not going to do a whole lot of traveling, because I'm going to be sitting here in my gym, you know, working day in, day out to make these guys ready, and so that by the time they get to the fights, they're so prepared for that fight that they don't really need to be coached there.
Well, it's probably going to be easy anyway, Phil, since Portland, Oregon, I got voted number one city to live in and state to live in America. So you'll be able to attract everybody.
Well, yeah, if there's any guys from Ireland want to come train with us, the door's open.
Yeah, we'll surf in the morning, ski in the evening. Is that it?
that's all we do out here.
Come on.
Get up in the morning, ski for a little bit, do some MMA training, then we go, you know, go surfing at night or skiing at night. Yeah,
nice.
It's just, you know, it's just their life.
Brilliant stuff. And just one more question before we wrap it up, Phil. We've talked to Pat, I think, what, five times, Mark, on the show?
Five
or six times on the show before. And we've, you know, we've sort of gone through the whole experience in the last sort of year and a bit. Where would you like to see Pat go next? Who would you like to see him fight? Does he want the Gill fight? Does he want the Thompson fight? What does Pat want? And where would you like to see him go now that he's in the top 10 as well, ranked number 9 by the UFC?
I think I can't answer what Pat would say, but I can answer what I would say. I mean, for me, I think I want the Josh Thompson fight. I think the Gill fight coming off a loss, the UFC is probably going to be honest, protect their interest. That's too high of a risk fight. for Gil at this point. I mean, they're probably going to give him somebody a little bit less, get him on a win, and then after that win, yeah, we'd love to go fight Gil. Right now, Josh just came off a great win, and he's hot right now. I think it's a fight that would really help us catapult us towards the title shot. I think that in the short term is our best bet. But again, I mean, Gray Maynard, I mean, we just want to fight anybody that's going to give us, you know, a direct shot to the title, whether it's us or whoever. You know, we're going to kick everybody's ass at this level. I mean, right now, I mean, we got to win fights. We got to win big fights. And whoever the guy is, you know, across from us in the octagon, I mean, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power to have Pat Healy as ready as possible. And at this point, you know, we're not down far enough in the mix that we're probably going to get any surprises. We're going to fight one of the top guys. And you know, on one aspect, that makes it easier because you get a lot of film and a lot of other history with those guys. And, yeah. I mean, we're going to fight whoever they put in front of us. But we know it's going to be a big name, and we're going to be prepared, and we're going to win that fight just like we did with Jim Miller.
And just one final question before we wrap it up. Is there any up-and-comers in the gym, younger guys, that we should possibly look out for in the mixed martial arts world?
Yeah, I mean, we have a kid in here named Brent Prentice. He's unbelievable. He's a 2-0. He's got a lot of talent and abilities. And just a really nice kid. And so he's right now probably one of my hotter young 155ers, and it'll be really interesting to see where he goes. You know, and so I think right now, if you want to watch a kid coming through the ranks, Brent Prentice would be that guy.
Awesome stuff, Tom. Phil, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you from Paddy, Mark and myself. It's been great to catch up with you. The success behind Pat. Anyone you'd like to thank or any sponsors you'd like to plug before we wrap it up?
Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to thank Torque for providing us with the shirts, you know, and Venom for the shorts, and everybody who supported Pat. Also, you know, Jason House at Iridium Sports Management, he's done a great job with Pat and ultimately helping really support the Sports Lab athletes. And, you know, and I'd really like to thank every guy, all the fighters, you know, Mike Pierce, you know, Pat Healy, Ryan Healy, Dave Jansen, Tyson Nam, Ian Loveland, all the guys that are in here putting in the work day in, day out. I mean, I appreciate my guys because I ask a lot of them, and we continue to perform. And so, and thank you, know, those are the guys that I rely on.
And where can the guys find you on Twitter?
You can just, I'm just basically Team Sports Lab, at Team Sports Lab. That's the official Twitter site for Sports Lab. So.
Great stuff. And when do you hope to have the new gym open?
Well, we were hoping to be in here yesterday, but we're probably about at the end of this weekend, so we'll probably be in here training on Monday.
Brilliant stuff. Tom. So, listen, I really appreciate your time, Phil. I really, really appreciate it, and I hope to speak to you again in the future. I'm sure we will. Thanks very much for your time, bro.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
That was Phil Claude from the Sports Lab in Portland, Oregon. The top man, Phil, and thanks again for his time. If you just noticed something about a strange or sort of similar accent or familiar accent in there, that was actually Paddy McGran, who was we basically had a few technical issues last week and we didn't get the show finished. We did postpone it for a few days and Paddy couldn't make it into the studio tonight. We were going to talk about the injuries of UFC. So Mark, big news today. For guys on this side of the pond, obviously we were over. Well, you were over in Sweden at the UFC on Fuel Card 9, and I asked Gary, obviously the rumours were rife then about a possible TV deal with BT Vision, BT Sports. So it was confirmed today the UFC have signed a 3-year deal with BT for exclusive rights to the UFC in the UK and Ireland. We've heard there's going to be over 400 hours of programming each year. Over 30 live events. We're going to see the UFC does over 30 live events a year, so that means every live event apparently is going to be on. But is it a little bit sloppy the way things have come out? There's been a lot of questions I've seen on Twitter today. We've put it up, and you know, people are very concerned on this side of the pond early on. I know there's a press conference scheduled for Thursday with BT guys and Gary Cook, I think, will be there from the UFC. But there was the questions obviously about, you know, will this be available? It's going to be via Sky television, as in available on one of their channels. There was a lot of questions from Virgin customers in the UK, and obviously a lot of questions from the UPC customers
In Ireland.
In Ireland, which is a huge provider in Ireland. I'm not even sure if it's bigger. It's very close to being as big as Sky.
Yeah, their broadband.
Especially
better,
in the capital, because their broadband is so quick. But, you know, it throws it up in the air, really. Are they just moving sideways?
It's a step sideways, in the most sideways direction you could. Like, I'm absolutely furious at this. I think there's a lot of people are waiting, but it really is. It's the exact same thing as ESPN. It really is. It's just such a disappointment. The UFC really, they had a choice to take a lesser money deal where they could be on a more mainstream station in Sky Sports. I think it would have been if they kept with BSkyB and stayed on Fox, that would have been the way to play it. And I'm just really disappointed in Dana White and Gary Cook, who has the inside over here and knows the way the media works from a sporting perspective, with his work with Nike in the past and Manchester City. He knows how to market a brand, and he should be doing a better job in Dana and Lorenzo's ear, telling them how to play this. The fact is, the UFC would rather be involved with bigger companies and better companies, and BT is basically ESPN without the track record of producing sporting programming. Their offices aren't even finished yet. They've got a lot of C-list presenters brought over for their other sports thus far, and they're bringing over MotoGP and Premiership Rugby. It really is a step sideways. It's 4-4-5 on the Skybox, I think. And personally, I've never been above 4-0-5. I don't know. Do you even get it, Niall? You're with UPC. I'm with Sky.
ESPN, yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
are you paying for that? Extra for that?
Yeah, I'm not sure the way the contract works. I just seem to pay for all the sports.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not going to drag the bill out on there.
I won't go into contracts now. But on the press release we got today, you know, it says that they're going to show all the live events, every single UFC live event. But I think it's just again the thing that people are getting, you know,
it's unclear.
It is unclear, and I think they possibly should have waited with the press release and everything like this and until after Thursday to be a bit more clear on what's going to happen. And I think, you know, as far as we know, from there's been a bit of feedback from UPC in Ireland saying they're not aware of what's going on yet, so they don't know. And as far as I know, Virgin don't know in the UK, and it is sort of up in the air with a lot of, you know, who's going to be able to watch this? Are you going to have to change, you know, your provider, etc.?
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a pain in the backside. It'd be great pain in the ass for me if UPC aren't going to be carrying it. We still don't know what the situation with ESPN UK is. I know there's a lot of people being, you know, let go. They seem to be phasing out over there, whether they're going to, you know, use the ESPN channel for certain markets to show the UFC if they do buy it.
They might just use it as a classic station or show some of their Bundesliga coverage. But the fact is that station only existed because they bought the contract for the Premier League over here for the football. And they bought 38 games, and they were mostly C-list games three years ago. And that was why the ESPN thought they were going to branch into the UK. The fact is that BT Telecom has been subsidised by the British government. They've got a subsidy so as that Sky wouldn't have a complete monopoly, and have managed to wrangle away a slightly juicier Premiership football deal with them, where they get 38 games and a lot of the top games. And because of that, BSkyB are now pissed off with BT Telecom as the entire company, and they're not even allowing it to be advertised on Sky Sports. So they're falling out with the wrong guys, and I feel like in 3 years' time we're going to be here, because the fact is that if hardcore, we're not going to be bringing any new fans into the forefront here.
Well, what did you say, Mark? How many? You said to me earlier, how many actual people in the UK have bought?
Yeah, it was I'll tell you. Yeah, it wasn't a big take up on subscribers because of the new BT Telecom deal, and
it's probably like for any of our American listeners, it's probably like you know, a Fuel TV
exactly
thing on this side of the pond, where, you know, there's not a lot of people availing of this service at the moment. You know, it's not really promoted. I think this is their really big year coming in now this year.
Well, the UFC has an ego about them if they think that they're, and the thing is that the fans over here will stay up all night and travel wherever and will follow them wherever they go. They will find them on Bebo TV if they have to. That's the hardcore fan base of UFC. Mixed martial arts fans are rabid, and they will find it no matter where it is. But the thing is that if you put it on Sky and on a mainstream platform, people wouldn't have to be, the mainstream won't be dicked around like we are by The Ultimate Fighter per se being postponed for kicks and
things like
that.
To be honest, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, because we haven't heard everything yet. Clearly, it's still the work probably should have been done.
Yeah,
and it should be more. We should have more clarity about it. But I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt till Thursday. See what we hear on Thursday. See what's going to happen. But it'll be a complete shambles if it's not available on UPC and Virgin in the UK, because it just puts so many people just going, what the fuck is going on. But the good thing is that is the extra programming. I think they're going to, every single UFC event is going to be on the channel. All the live events, the Ultimate Fighter is going to be on. They're going to have prime time events, as far as we're aware of, in the press release that, for the fuel cards over this side of the pond, in Europe, that there's going to be, build up, and it's going to, excite people in lead up to the fight. So that's a really, I think, promising step. But, it really does fall down to, who's going to be able to watch what, etc., but...
Well, there is the good thing. There is the good thing as well, that because ESPN has all of the contracts it had with showing NBA and American football and everything, and showing the American sports, because of that over here, BT Sport probably isn't going to be doing that. So at least the UFC will have the night hours. So they won't be holding back on showing an episode of The Ultimate Fighter because an NBA game has gone into overtime or a college football game is going over.
Yeah, they've signed up at the moment. They've obviously Barclays Premier League Football, the FA Cup, Aviva Premiership Rugby Union, and the WTA Tennis Tour. I think they're getting the Moto Sport as well,
the Moto GP.
So that's obviously a World Series as well, and obviously they're still building on other contracts at the moment.
They've gone for the ESPN, the French football, the German football, and the Italian football as well.
This was Gary Cook's early quotes of the announcement of the deal. "This agreement is a landmark step in the UFC's development in the UK, as it will increase our exposure to a much wider and more mainstream sporting audience. It means that the UK joins USA, Canada, Australia and Brazil as one of four largest TV broadcast markets. And BT Sports certainly shares our vision for the premium quality broadcast of elite performance sport for our UK audience, and we're very excited about the strategic partnership we've entered into. We look forward to working alongside them and showing a wider fan base how exciting and engaging the UFC is." Mark,
Gary's a salesman. That's what his job is. He does this for a living. Like, he was always going to phrase it pretty well, and that's phrased pretty coolly. I've already heard him say they share his vision in the past, and like, Gary's good at his job, but they have to live up to what they're saying, really.
We're just getting in. I'm on the Twitter machine here. I've asked some of our guys some questions, but they haven't to say about the BT deal. And there's a question here. Everything UK MMA, will they be doing a monthly subscription to the channel, or will it be pay-per-view events? No, it won't be pay-per-view. It'll be a monthly subscription is the way the channel will work, as far as we're aware.
Yeah.
The same as your Sky Sports packages you get on, any sort of channel. Same you get your Satanta over here, your ESPN over here as well. It'll be work like that. It'll be a monthly subscription, I'm sure. That's the way it's going to work. I don't think they'll be in pay-per-view because of...
I thought
you can't sell pay-per-view to an audience on this side of the pond, especially if the sport's so new. It wouldn't make sense at all. So I don't think that's going to happen. But thanks for the question. Everything...
Yeah, no,
you everything MMA.
You do have to put more build in the sport over here before you get to do anything like a pay-per-view concept. But I thought Sky would have had if they had the time to build up the sport, I thought they might have had a chance of doing that. And over time, they could get us to a point that they'd be doing pay-per-views over here. Not that I want that, because I'd much rather be getting it for free. But I would have thought that's the way Gary Cook is thinking anyway.
Yeah, well... It really does cause problems. I know, as I said, we give them the benefit of the doubt, but if it isn't on, a lot of chance I've heard there'd be is going to be a lot of people very, very peed off again.
I was furious this morning.
With the UFC, I was talking to Mark and he wasn't the best piece. But I'm willing to give the guys the benefit of the doubt and just see what happens at this press conference on Thursday.
That I think you're dead right that they should have waited till after that to do such a rabid press release. Is just a bit silly, isn't it?
Exactly, and we'll try and get Gary on in the coming weeks on the show. Promising nothing, but we'll try and get an interview with Gary because we've talked to him in the past, obviously, over at the event. So we'll see what happens with that. And sorry, UPC have said here, someone tweeted them, we don't have an update on this, but we'll inform our customers if it changes. See, they just don't know. I think they should just wait until after the press conference. It would have made a lot more sense. But
well, it's cool because I'm doing the Moto GP podcast after this, and we've pretty much got the same thing lined up for this, where we've got loads of people on Twitter doing the same thing. So.
All right, Marky. Yeah. Lightweights.
Well, we had a chance to talk and catch up with a pretty damn good lightweight today, didn't we?
Yeah, TJ Grant, ranked number 4 lightweight in the world. Sorry, no.
No, number 6, isn't he?
Number 6, I beg your pardon.
Sorry.
Brain freeze. Yeah, number 6 lightweight in the world, and he's gone up against Gray Maynard on the 25th of this month in Las Vegas, Nevada, obviously on the heavyweight card, really.
Yeah.
Is what it is, the two big heavyweight clashes.
They only do them in Vegas. Card.
That's it. So, no, it's a big fight for TJ. The winner of this fight, as far as we believe, is going to get a title shot.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see who comes out on top in this. Obviously, Gray hasn't fought for quite some time. And it's going to be really interesting to see if TJ can keep his 4-fight winning streak going. So we caught up with TJ Grant just a few moments ago. And guys, we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
This is Coach Wink, and you guys are listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line now by TJ Grant, who goes up against Gray Maynard at UFC 160 on the 25th of May in the MGM Grant in Las Vegas, Nevada. First of all, TJ, thanks very much for your time. How are you keeping, mate?
Good, man. How about yourself?
Not too bad here in sunny Dublin. We've got a bit of good weather for the last couple of days, so we're all summered out in a pair of shorts here in the studio.
Nice, yeah, we're in the same boat here over Nova Scotia.
Good stuff, mate. Mate, obviously you've this big fight coming up in 3 weeks' time. What's the feeling like? How excited are you for this fight against Gray Maynard?
I mean, I always get excited for fights. This one definitely is some added motivation. Just getting to fight a guy like Gray. You know, the title shot aside, you know, it's just fight a guy like Gray, and, you know, I'm trying to make positive steps in my career and just keep moving forward. And, you know, this is, you know, he's a tough test, and I'm up for the challenge.
TJ, your rise through the division has been pretty organic. You've been kind of stepping up a level each time, and you've risen to the occasion on each fight you've had. Is there any difference in mentality going into this fight now that you know that a potential title fight with Benson Henderson would be looming? Does it blare in your mindset going into it at all?
Not really. Anytime I get out there and you know, the cage door locks, it's about survival, and it's about winning. The best way to survive is to go out there and do your thing, and you know, you've got that guy in front of you, you can basically do whatever you want to try to take him out of there, and that's what it's all about. I have a lot of pride. I train my butt off so that I go out there prepared, and I feel like at that point I can do my thing. So I don't really think about anything else. I don't even think about the money when I'm fighting. I'm purely thinking about winning and just doing my job.
And TJ, you're obviously on a 4-fight win streak since moving to lightweight. There's been a lot more media attention. Do you feel as though you're getting your just deserves now at the moment after this 4-fight win streak?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, with time, I'm getting, you know, more well known, and my name's getting out there, and I'm getting some promotion. I'm happy the way my career came along. You know, I've got, you know, built a lot of experience. I've had 10 fights in the UFC. Some guys, you know, they get in there and they're instantly just, you know, they're thrown to the wolves. And I feel like I was kind of thrown to the wolves too. Like, who hasn't? But, you know, I've built up a lot of experience. I've had some, you know, had some setbacks in my career, and, you know, they've all made me a better fighter. And, you know, I've learned from every win. I've learned from every loss. And, you know, the losses definitely teach you a little bit more. So, you know, I'm glad to be where I'm at right now.
After your last win against Matt Wyman, you talked about how this was the weight class you were meant to be in, and you've been just so impressive since you made the move down in weight class. Did you have to, because I know you're still training out in Fit Plus, did you have to work with anyone to get your nutrition right, or what was the mindset like in dropping the weight class, and did you have to work with nutritionists or change anything about the way you approached the sport?
You know what, I just had to a major, you know, adjustment in my diet. Just I know how to eat good, and, you know, it's no real secret how to eat good, but it's just a matter of, you know, eliminating the bad stuff. And, you know, I was able to eat, you know, fighting at 170, I could basically eat whatever I wanted, and that's not, you know, that's not what fighting's all about. You know, you should have to make sacrifices, you know, and I was fighting guys bigger than me for my whole career. It's not like I was like a big or even average size 170 that's cutting to 55. Like, I was what I feel like a small 170, and, you know, my natural body, it feels, you know, really comfortable at 155. You know, I do have to diet and get my weight down, and but at the same time, it's not too taxing on the body, and I feel good doing it.
And TJ, would you just give us a word? Who are the guys behind you at Fit Plus Gym? Who have you been working with in the lead up to this fight?
You know,
the head coach is Scott McLean. He's one of my best friends. You know, we've kind of been in this from the beginning together, and you know, he's really done a great job of you know, just, you know, grooming me as a fighter, and you know, teaching me along the way, and what, you know, what aspects we do need to cover, like, you know, bringing fighters in, and you know, we've also taken trips to you know, to make improvements in all the aspects of the fight game. And you know, I got a lot of guys I train with every day, you know, like unsung heroes, but you know, like so many guys just help me. You know, Chris Glades, Tristan Johnson, Adam Piercy, Cameron Daniels, and we also brought in Charlie Benjamin.
Okay.
For this training camp, and Chris Weiss is another guy who trains with Team Takedown. He's in town here to help me get ready, and you know, I'm feeling great coming into this one.
Yeah, it seems like Canada, it really does breed an MMA fighter who can actually stick with what made him and brought him to the UFC in the first place. Has it been hard? Because in a lot of other countries, people will vacate and go off to one of the more kind of famed stables at the moment and go off to Jackson Winklejohn or AKA or something like that. Is it hard to not be poached or lured away from Nova Scotia for you as a fighter?
You know what, I like it here. I mean, this is my home, and you know, this is where all my friends and family are too. But at the same time, I understand, like, some people have to go away, but I just feel like, I, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yeah. Like, I get everything I need here as a fighter, and I also get a lot of attention, which is, I think, also key in development as a fighter, because, you know, once you start fighting the big dogs in the UFC, you know, you still need to make improvements, or you're going to, you know, your game's going to get figured out pretty quick, so... You know, I feel like sometimes I'm not, you know, hating on any big camps, but maybe the attention's not always there. And sometimes, you know, guys go to these camps, and while it's amazing and it helps you get ready, and iron sharpens iron and all that different stuff, you're fighting for survival, and you're basically doing what you're comfortable with, your comfort zone, basically to survive. And you get better at that, but instead of, you know, branching out and learning new things. And I feel like I'm always learning new things, and, you know, I like the recipe we have here.
And you talked also there, obviously, about you've brought in Charlie Brennan, and is that to replicate Gray's style? Because he's quite a similar fighter to Gray Maynard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as the wrestling goes, you know, they're both, you know, great wrestlers, and Charlie has made the cut down to 155 now, so he's had a few fights outside the UFC, and he came up right after one of his last win, and, you know, he's in great shape, just really helped push me, and, you know, that's what you need, you know. And he's, you know, just been a solid training partner all around.
TJ, it's a nice clash of styles. How do you see the fight going? Do you want to keep it to striking, kind of avoid going to the ground, or how do you want the fight to go?
You know what? To me, it's, you know, whatever. Like, I'm going to go out there, and I'm just going to do what I do and I've done in all my fights. And I just kind of go out and fight. Like, you know, if the takedown is there, it's going to be tough to get, but I'm not afraid to... you know, to try to take him down. I feel like, you know, my wrestling's good. I've been working on it for a long time, and, you know, it's about timing your shots and stuff like that, and, you know, I feel good in the scrambles. I feel good off my back, so I'm just going to go out there and, you know, let it all go, man. I'm going to try to fight loose and, you know, just not be too tight, not too worried about anything. You know, what happens if he takes me down? Like, it's not the end of the world, right? So
yeah.
We'll see how she goes.
I hate to ask this question, but because I know you're probably completely focused on this fight, but did you watch the Benson Henderson Gil Melendez fight, and what did you think of the judging in that?
Yeah, I watched the fight, and you know what, I thought my memory, I think that what was it, I'm trying to remember, but I think that I had it for Benson. I had the last two rounds for Benson, and I think I had maybe the second round for Benson, but it was a close round, and it could have went either way. But personally, that's the way I saw it. Because the champion, like, it was so close, I said maybe he would have got it. And, you know, I thought Gilbert definitely had some momentum there. He looked like he was the better fighter. He just, you know, kind of took his foot off the gas in the last two rounds, and I feel like that might have costed him.
And there's been, you know, what's your opinion on the judging in mixed martial arts anyway? Because obviously the last sort of four, you know, lightweight title bouts could have gone either way with Frankie Edgar, and obviously the last fight out with Gil Melendez. And, you know, there's been other fights that have been highly criticised in the last number of months. Named Matt Riddle in London against Andy O, it was another shocking call. What's your general opinion on the judging in the sport?
I feel like there's people that don't have a clue what they're watching, making the calls, and sometimes they come from like a boxing background, so they only score that, and sometimes you just I have no idea what they're watching, but it is a tough position to be in, but at the same time they have the best seats in the house, and they can kind of feel. And there's times where I'm just totally like, what the hell? But, it comes down to the commission's got to do something about it. And, I feel like, the boxing commission's maybe, at times don't have a clue what they're doing, and they're putting the wrong people in charge. And it'll never change, not in the short term anyway, but hopefully in the long term it does, get weeded out. And some of the old school guys that really don't know what they're talking about, or, they know so-and-so, so they're able to do this, they won't be there anymore.
And you're going with this fight as underdog. How do you feel about that? Does that bother you at all in any way?
Not really, man. To me, it doesn't really matter. I've been the underdog before. It's actually less pressure, I guess. Maybe. I mean, I put pressure on myself no matter what. But to me, who cares what other people think? Really, I got to go out there and Gray Maynard's going to have to answer to me in the cage, and it's the same thing. I got to answer to him. We're going to go out there and fight each other and try to take each other out, and I believe in myself. I believe in my training, my training partners, all that stuff. So I'm ready to rock and roll, man. Just gonna go out there and fight loose and hopefully get a good result.
So what's gonna happen on the 25th of May? What way is the fight gonna go? Are we gonna see a KO, a submission? What's your prediction for the fight?
I feel good. I feel confident. Prediction wise, it's going to be good, man. I'm going to go out there, and he's going to come out, and we're going to fight. That's about it. That's all I can guarantee, man. But, I like my chances.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Just before we wrap it up, is there any sponsors, anyone you'd like to thank, brother?
Twitter?
Yeah, sure, man. I want to thank Echo, Venom, Cashbin ATM, Popeye's Health Supplements, Hamachi House, Wild Wing, and Remote Access Technology. They helped me along the way, and couldn't do it without them.
Awesome stuff. And what's the Twitter handle?
@TJ_Grant.
Brilliant stuff. TJ, listen, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck on the 25th of May, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
Sounds good, man. Thank you. Take care.
And that was TJ Grant, the UFC number 6th ranked flyweight in the world. He's gone up against Gray Maynard, as we know, in just... over 3 weeks.
Over 3 weeks. 25th. It's the first.
Whatever. Yeah. I can't add. I'm not here for.
We're not here for maths. Yeah, it's not our jobs.
Exactly. So really looking forward to that fight. It should be a cracker on that card in Vegas. Obviously, Bigfoot.
It's cool.
And
yeah, it's cool.
Kane and Mark Hunt on JDS on that card as well. On the main card, all the boys in the main
big
card.
Boys.
No, I can't wait for that. It's going to be a cracking card. So yeah, thanks many for the man from Nova Scotia as well for his time, and best of luck, and surely we'll talk to him again in the future. Obviously, Mark, there's been some cuts this week. It's sort of inevitable. Can't really say that word, but pretty puzzled with pretty.
No, it's not puzzled.
Not puzzled. I was pretty disappointed with the Pablo Garza. Obviously, we've talked to Pablo a number of times in the show, and he's a really good dude. I just thought, after that Hominick fight, that he wouldn't be in that much danger. It was a poor performance against Brandeis in Sweden, but I thought they might have kept him around for, because he does seem to be improving.
Yeah.
Obviously there wasn't much improvement in the last fight. That's a stupid thing to say from me. But the Mark Hominick fight, he was, was such a good repertoire.
And it was a good story when he beat, one of his heroes, and one of the reasons he got into mixed martial arts. There was something about that. A lot of the time when... he seemed like a relevant name, and but 3 out of 4 losses. Can't argue when they're going to make cuts. Basically, one in and one out. Really, at the moment, they're looking. Yeah. They said 100 cuts. So.
Yeah, exactly, and also cut Antonio Carvalho, and we've learned as well that Clifford Starks has been cut. I don't know if that's been 100% confirmed. A lot of places have been reporting it, but it doesn't seem to be coming up in a lot of the Twitter feeds.
Yeah,
but Pablo Garza and Antonio Carvalho have 100%.
We must actually. We must actually check what number we're up to with the cuts this year, because he said, well, from the point when we said there was going to be 100 cuts, it's a bit depressing really, but I think these are going to happen. I think everyone did. Anyone from the Tough House was basically on a one fight and then you're out from this season of Tough.
Season?
16.
I don't think Bubba McDaniel has been renewed. I'm not sure. I don't think so. No, I don't
okay.
think
oh,
his contract's
okay,
been renewed
okay.
As far as I know. I felt a little bit sorry for Carvalho. He's only lost he's only lost, you know, he was on a 2-fight win streak, and then he loses to Darren Elkins at 158 and gets cut. You know, he's coming off wins before that against Daniel Pineda and Rodrigo Dam, and I was just a little bit harsh, really. And obviously Elkins was on his fantastic run,
yeah,
till he lost obviously last time out against Chad Mendes. Just a little bit harsh, really. Well,
especially when you have people like Leonard Garcia still in gainful employment.
Well, that's it. There's been no decision on Leonard yet. So
I think the thing is that Joe Silva sometimes thinks that if you let enough time pass, people will forget that he's still there until the next fight comes about.
Yeah, and Clifford Stark's been cut off. Well, as far as we know, coming off losses to Ed Herman and Yoel Romero with that beautiful flying knee and punches that Romero landed at UFC on Fox Melendez versus Henderson just 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So, you know, it does really prove that things are tightening up, and it's sort of the guys further down the rosters now are getting less of a chance to stake a claim, for a UFC career, and it's just the nature of the business. It's a cutthroat business, and you know, things are the amount of fighters, obviously, just in a strike force, they're making room for the women.
Well, that's it. The influx of women now is going to change things.
Rapidly. You're going to see less TUF guys getting in unless they're of a really high level. It's going to cut back everything, and especially I think in 2014, after the end of this year, once the women's division settles down, it's going to be you know, guys are going to be getting cut left and right, maybe, you know, one fight loss, whatever, they come in and one fight contracts to possibly prove themselves, to lose their fight, they'll be cut and told to, you know, go elsewhere, get their records back up, and maybe re-resign. But I'm sure that Pablo Garza and you know, Carvalho will be back,
hopefully, yeah,
and Clifford, all of them could return. They're all good enough fighters, I think, personally, to get back in the UFC in the future
as well. They really do have to set a precedent, because it was one thing I really didn't like about this season of The Ultimate Fighter is signing all 16 when the entire prize for it is a 6-figure deal with The Ultimate Fighter. Like, it really bollocks up the whole kind of entire concept of the competition, really, if you're going to sign everyone off the back of it.
Well, you'll see a lot of guys that won't enter the TUF house because they don't want to go, because you're on a TUF contract and obviously there's lesser money, etc., so they'd rather, you know, stay in the pro. I know Conor McGregor did that.
Chris Fields did the exact same thing.
Yeah, Chris didn't want to go over. Yeah. Conor was offered to go on the Tough House a number of times, and I think turned it down because he didn't want to go down that route. You know, it's a good opportunity for guys that don't feel as they're getting the opportunity. But if you're, you know, confident enough to stay out and be able to stay out financially of the big organizations and get there eventually without going through the house, you're probably better off. Because the financial rewards will probably be greater once you get in there, because they nail you with these TUF contracts. Well, not
it's
nail
a
you,
standard
but, it,
contract.
But it's a standard contract in the UFC. It's still good money, don't get me wrong, but I think it's probably more advisable to go down the other route.
Yeah, I think people like Conor now has obviously made a name for himself.
But especially with the guy, the amount of contracts they're handing out as well. It does seem to make sense. Okay, so that's, you know, a bit of negative news, obviously, this week, but it can't be all. I'm sure. Sure, those guys will be back in a word for them, because it's tough in this day and age as well. Okay, Marky.
Well, Anderson Silva is he's apparently a little more similar to Nick Diaz than we once thought he is.
Fine, $50,000 for not turning up for media obligations.
Yeah, well, it's a bit silly. I don't really understand the exact logistics, but I think Anderson Silva has. I would have thought that if anyone was going to be able to get away with it, it would have been him, really, but apparently not. Apparently Dana's sick of his antics, so
well, that's it. Listen, it's not going to really, it's probably just, you know, pocket change to save the money he's making these days. And obviously he is facing Chris Weidman there,
going
to
be a big fight
soon. Looking forward to that one greatly. It'd be interesting to see how Chris comes back. Quite a long layoff, so to speak.
And after his house was flooded and destroyed.
That's it, he's had a rough year, in fairness, and hopefully things are looking up in the parts of New York. And Mark, I'm absolutely furious with Tyson Fury running
Jesus.
His mouth
oh,
again.
Oh, Jesus.
What can we say? The guy said he wants to one day come and fight in the UFC against Cain Velasquez for the right price. Well done, good promotion. We're not going to waste any more of our time trying to up your stock as a boxer.
He could definitely take him.
He's a disrespectful clown. The guy, you know, he knocked himself out once nearly with a right hook. So I think that's what it says all. We won't entertain that, Mark, I think, on the show. So, Marky.
Did you watch Mayweather? Mayweather's big fight?
No, I didn't, actually. I was a bad boy. I went out of... had a nasty weekend of alcohol and partying.
Yeah, we were in here doing interviews on Friday, and then I know you went out and didn't come home till roughly about Sunday then.
Yeah, it was one of those. It escalated from nothing. It was just, we had a good bit of good weather here, obviously, the weekend. So
on a
bank holiday, people tend to take, you know, full advantage when we've a bit of sun. So that was my thinking anyway in it.
You see, you played it wrong. You have to think it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, you gotta wait till you hear that bell and kind of play it.
I just couldn't control myself.
I'm just hanging now, but you know, burritos will fix you in so many ways.
I'm going to turn into a burrito, as I've stated. But listen, guys, before we wrap it up this evening, obviously, if you want to get in contact with the ad again, you can find us on Twitter at Talking Brawls, at Mark Moriarty 101,
at Noel McGrath 4,
on Facebook, facebook.com/ Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. And you can catch us on Gmail if you want to get in direct contact with us, talkingbrawls@gmail.com. Mark, I would like to thank the guests again this week for coming on. I'd love to thank TJ Grant and Phil Claude from the Sports Lab. Really appreciate their time. And we'll be back next week with another show.
Big show looming. And it feels a bit like it's UFC school summer holidays at the moment. The 3 week gap's huge.
It does. It's been very quiet the last sort of 2 weeks. That's why we spaced out the shows a little bit.
It was balls to the wall for that month of just show after show after show. And it almost feels weird to have 3 week break. It's strange. And I think that Vitor Belfort versus Rockhold main event is looming pretty close now. And the anticipation's getting pretty big for it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, you know, people are...
I'm not a big Vitor fan, but...
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are at the moment, especially the side of the pond, and there's been a lot of stick for him about his juicing and his TRT treatment. So, just let's see. Let's see, Jesus will bring him
through with the TRT. That'll be grand, you know. I think Rocco will take him, but...
I do as well. But, you know, we'll be back next week with more talk and stuff, and we've Chris Fields on the show again next week. Really looking forward to talking to Chris yet again. He is on that card in Dublin. It's an absolutely cracking card with Carl Pendred defending against Che Mills, his first title defence. Mark, how much are we looking forward to that card here in Dublin? It's a whole stack card. I think they're announced.
It's going to be immense. Like I'll be back there covering it, and I know you're at a wedding, which is it's going to be unfortunate, but I'm sure you'll be streaming it online at the wedding on the phone.
Can't wait for it.
Can you do that under the table?
I want to get them to cancel the wedding, but I just don't think it's going to happen, and it's one I can't miss. Obviously, I don't want to miss it because it's very very good friends of mine. So really looking forward to that. And also on that card, there's a flyweight tournament as well, the first ever flyweight champion for Cage Warriors. And Paddy was supposed to be on it as well, Paddy Hewlin, but I think there's going to be some news coming in coming weeks with him. And Chris is going to be going up against Norman Parise, I think the pronunciation is, in the middleweight division.
Linguist.
And you can get your tickets for that at the Helix box office, and you can get them on the Cage Warriors website. All the information is there for that, so definitely check out that stuff. It is going to be a barn burner of a card in June 1st it is in the Helix in Dublin. So guys, we're going to leave you, and thanks again, obviously, just a quick mention again to Phil Claude for his time. A really in-depth interview with Phil, I think you'll agree. And TJ Grant for his time, obviously a very busy man at the moment preparing for Gray Maynard. So from Mark Moriarty and myself, Noel McGrath, it is good luck and good light. Talk to you next week. Thanks guys.